And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen on the website by visiting that. It is nickcraig.com. A good Friday morning to you. A scorcher out there over the next couple of days. Temperatures expected to be in the 90s today. It was very close to 90 yesterday. Looks to be a very nice weekend across southeastern North Carolina. Hopefully you are getting ready for that. However, before we can get into the weekend, we do have some news this morning. A major announcement. I mentioned this yesterday towards the end of the show after we chatted with Josie Barnhart about the situation that she's dealing with in the county school system, that New Hanover County Commissioner Dane Scalise and Wilmington City Councilman Luke Waddell, their name appeared on a document out of the UNC Board of Governors at the statewide level. That's the group that oversees the entirety of the UNC system as appointees to UNCW's Board of Trustees. The Board of Governors had their meeting in Raleigh yesterday, and both votes did pass, and the University of North Carolina at Wilmington will have two new members to its board of trustees. It will be Dane and Luke. They will start serving their term in July, according to details. The chancellor saying, quote, their dedication to public service and investment in the Cape Fear region will help the university align our goals with local and regional developments, enhancing our mission to transform lives through education and community engagement. Now, with this, the UNCW Board of Trustees, every UNC system school has a Board of Trustees. And, you know, we've looked at some issues, and I remember discussions over the past couple of years with the former members of the Board of Trustees. And, you know, UNCW, fortunately, it seems like things are on a better path. But you go back just a couple of years ago, and UNCW was dealing with some major issues. Of course, the saga with Mike Adams that ended so horrifically with him taking his own life after putting up with decades of harassment within the school system over at UNC Wilmington. He ended up suing the school, got a $500,000 payout from a court as it related to some of the issues there. Back in 2021, you had a UNCW professor that posted on social media about blowing up Republicans. I mean, and you know, it's unfortunate because And this is something that is not unique to even the UNC system or UNCW. This is the broader discussion and conversation over what many institutions of so-called higher learning have become. I mean, the news has been littered with these stories over the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years. They're all over the place. Professors saying the most absurd things that you can imagine, administration at campuses just blatantly ignoring the law and acting in a completely inappropriate manner. This has been a growing trend in public education. Now, fortunately, as we look at some of the diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, the UNC System Board of Governors passed some rules last year stripping diversity, equity, and inclusion from all of the UNC schools. Now, the schools are the ones that are individually responsible for making some of those changes. We've seen some of the changes out at UNCW as well. Woody White, who was formerly a member of the UNCW board, he did resign back a couple of years ago. He was a relatively frequent guest on the old radio show as it related to what was going on at UNCW, former county commissioner as well. He said, quote, with the additions of Commissioner Scalise and Councilman Waddell to the UNC Board of Trustees, the strong ties of this great university with the city and the county in which it's rooted add dimensions and scale to the shared vision for the future. And I mentioned this yesterday as well. You can't really think of a better group of people to have on your Board of Trustees than a prominent county commissioner and a prominent city council member. I mean, so much of what goes on in our community is driven by either the city or the county. And obviously, UNCW is its own independent entity. I don't think this indicates that the county and the city are taking over control of the university by any stretch of the imagination. But as government continues to unfold, and as we continue to see major population growth in our region of North Carolina, how great is it to have two people that are dealing with this day in and day out, like Dane and like Luke, sitting on the board of trustees at UNCW? I can only imagine that former commissioner Woody White had something to do with these appointments. He did give his quote, which I just read. He, as I mentioned, he formerly served on that board. This is great. These are two phenomenal individuals. If you've been listening to me for any stretch of time, you're very familiar with Luke. You're very familiar with Dane. These two guys are actively involved in our community. They are leading the charge as it relates to local government. And I couldn't be more thrilled for both of them. They both had a variety of posts on social media yesterday talking about this appointment. They will be serving a four-year term on the board, and they will be sworn in, and that whole process will begin in the month of July when they are replacing some existing board members. Their terms end in July. Luke and Dane will be sworn onto the board. And of course, like everything else, we'll watch that as it continues to unfold. So props to the UNC Board of Governors for appointing Luke and Dane and voting on their approval. Great news for Southeastern North Carolina. Look forward to seeing what they have to say and do as it relates to the Board of Trustees. In some international news this morning, kind of been hearing rumors and rumblings about this for the last week or so. There was the thought that Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, and the Ukrainian president, and Vladimir Zelensky, would be together in Turkey today for some peace talks. However, learning some details over the last day or so, the Russian president will not be engaged in those peace talks taking place in Turkey this week. The Russian delegation list, which was published by the Kremlin yesterday, does not include the Russian president on that list. Of course, you know, this whole thing is incredibly frustrating to watch. You've had this war that has been brewing for years now, where no side is making substantial gains. Russia's not moving any further into Ukraine. Ukraine is not pushing Russian forces any further out. Yes, there's little movements here and there, but nothing substantial has gone on in quite some time. Of course, under the previous administration in the United States, he didn't even bother picking up the phone and talking to the Russian president to try and figure out how to bring both parties to the table, stop the bloodshed, stop the war, stop the pain and suffering that's existing. He just thought it was better to keep his mouth shut. Meanwhile, the United States bankrolled Ukraine at the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, unaccountable money that went seemingly for not much. As you look at the actual war and the war lines, not much has gone on there at all. Then you transition over to what we have now within President Donald Trump, and it's a completely different ballgame. He has continually attempted to bring both sides to the table. And so now Trump is in a pretty rough spot because Putin seems uninterested in making an agreement. Putin seems uninterested in peace talks. And I've mentioned this before, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? When you think about the history of, you know, Russian pride and Russian strength, no wonder Putin doesn't want to make a peace deal, right? Because it completely shatters the image of strong Russian prominence on the international stage. I mean, if you think about this logically, and obviously I'm not taking anything away from the atrocities, the situation that has unfolded, all of the death and destruction. But when you look at it from a geopolitical standpoint, Russia is a massive country with a crazy amount of resources. The fact that they could not invade Ukraine and take it over in the matter of just a couple of short weeks is a huge military failure. Now, I'm not saying I wanted Russia to do that, but when you're looking at it from a pure military might, a pure military and strategic standpoint, when you look at the size of the Russian military in comparison to some of the defenses in Ukraine, this should have been, on paper, a relatively easy thing if the Russian president wanted to do it. He was unsuccessful in doing that. It's been years now. There is no idea and no thought that either side is going to quote-unquote win. Russia is not going to take over the Ukrainian territory. There's absolutely no way that they can accomplish that. Ukraine does not have the ability to push Russia completely out and hold their geographical borders in place. Somebody, both sides are going to lose in this. There's not going to be a quote-unquote winner. Nobody is going to win in this war. You've got hundreds of thousands of people dead from both countries. It's a disaster. And it appears obvious that the Russian president is too stubborn to give it up. And that's going to put not only the United States, but the rest of the world in a very vicarious position. Because what do? I mean, funneling money to Ukraine is not the solution because they don't have the ability to push Russia back. So you're just essentially pissing money away as you're just bankrolling the Ukrainian government, which I would argue doesn't make a lot of sense. Russia is a major war power in the world. They're a nuclear country. So what do you do here? But yes, you can increase sanctions and all of this other stuff. I don't think that has an effect. And honest to God, this morning, as I was have been reading about this over the last couple of days, I don't know where we go from here. The Russian president is too stubborn to give up and admit that he lost. I mean, that's what this comes down to. The Russian pride and his ability to admit, yeah, we lost. We were unsuccessful in our military attempt to take over another country. He's unwilling to admit that. And it's obvious that he's unwilling to admit that. He did have a call with President Donald Trump back, it was probably about a month and a half or so ago. Presumably, Trump encouraged him to keep going with these peace talks. And while there is going to be a Russian delegation in Turkey, the actual president is not going to be there. It would be the first time that Putin and Zelensky would have met face-to-face since this began. President Donald Trump, as I've mentioned, also indicated that he might fly to Turkey to join the negotiations if Putin and Zelensky were both there. That did not happen. While Trump said he would attend, he said, quote, he would do that if he thought it would be helpful, and said that he hoped Putin would attend the talks in person. The list of the Russian delegation published by the Kremlin strongly suggests that the Russian leader will not be there. Obviously, a last-minute surprise could change that, but it seems unlikely that that is going to be the case as it stands right now. So, for all intents and purposes, the war continues with a off-road that I don't really see right now. An ability for this to end, I just don't see. Russia's not going to give this up, and Ukraine can't push them out. And honest to God, I don't know what you do. And I suspect you're probably going to see one more effort from the United States in really trying to pressure, at this point, the Russian president to get his head out of his ass and come to the negotiating table and figure this thing out. And then the U.S. is just going to be done because there's nothing else to do. There's no path to any sort of peace or prosperity if the Russian president is unwilling to show up. And it's obvious that he is. It's obvious that he's unwilling to have these negotiations because he doesn't want to admit he lost. And I get it. Nobody wants to admit that they have lost. Nobody wants to admit defeat. That's not a good thing. But it becomes a point where there's nothing further to go on. So as we sit here this morning, the talks are underway in Istanbul. Zelensky is there. The Russian delegation is there. Putin is not. So they are meeting for the first time in 3 years to discuss peace. That is happening right now. Hopefully, even without the Russian president being there, the delegation is able to come to some sort of agreement. At this point, I just don't know. And all you can do is continue to ratchet up pressure on Russia. But I think it's a pride issue at this point. I think that the Russian government, specifically the Russian president, cannot admit that he was unsuccessful in his military operation. And I guess that means what? The war just goes on forever? You just keep this raging at nauseam permanently? I mean, that's not a solution either. I'm struggling to figure out kind of where you go with this from here. However, we will keep an eye on it. Hopefully those talks are successful this weekend or today and over the weekend, and hopefully when we are back together on Monday morning, we've got some substantive things to talk about as it relates to this agreement between Russia and Ukraine to figure out how we get this thing under wraps. So that is what's going on as it stands right now. Breaking this morning as well, just a couple of minutes ago from Axios. According to Trump, he says that the United States has made Iran an offer regarding a nuclear deal, noting that the country must act quickly or, quote, something bad will happen. So there's some comments coming in from the president. He's on this final leg of his trip today. I thought it made more sense on Monday to kind of do an overall recap of the president's visit. He's got one more day in the Middle East. That's today. So on Monday, we'll really dig into everything that came out of the discussions in the Middle East as they continued to unfold. He's in the United Arab Emirates this morning, the UAE, taking a tour of various parts of the UAE this morning with some dignitaries and leaders over there. So that's continuing as well. We'll continue to track the president's work over there. Just in some of the preliminary information that's come out, striking major deals with U.S. businesses, Boeing, as we covered the other day, GE Veronis, which has a major facility here in New Hanover County, the GE plant for planes and wind and gas turbines, a lot of things coming out of that as well. So we'll dive into and kind of do a full recap of Trump's trip coming up on Monday. So hopefully you'll stay tuned for that. Turning our attention to to some other news this morning, James Comey, you'll remember that name, former FBI director. He's a very interesting cat. He decided over the last couple of years that he was going to get actively involved in politics. This guy is the quintessential definition of the deep state. When you look at James, somebody like James Comey, I mean, this guy is the definition of what is the deep state. Individuals within our government that are doing their own bidding and really seemingly have no interest in what is best for the United States of America or its people. That's James Comey pretty much in a nutshell. This guy has been disgraced. This guy has a track record of being dishonest. This guy has a track record of politicizing the Federal Bureau of Investigations in favor of his own political party. Now, he's been out of the news over the last couple of years because he's no longer in that position. However, James Comey making news yesterday for seemingly threatening or encouraging somebody to kill Donald Trump in a post on Instagram. James Comey posted this picture on his Instagram page yesterday. For those listening this morning, it is seashells on a beach that say 8647. And you look at those numbers and you know, well, what's going on there? His caption was something to the extent of cool shells on the beach. Well, in military, in police, 86, when you're 86ing something, you're killing it. When somebody is killed, they've been 86'd. That's the term. I'm not in law enforcement, but I've watched enough television, I've watched enough movies to understand what that means. I can only imagine that the freaking guy that led the FBI knows what 86 means as it relates to law enforcement. And then, of course, 47. Who is that? Well, it's currently the number of President Donald Trump's presidency in the United States, the 45th and the 47th president of the U.S. So James Comey posted this picture on his Instagram yesterday, Donald Trump Jr. tweeting this out saying, "Just James Comey casually calling for my dad to be murdered. This is who the Dem media worships." And they do worship James Comey. They absolutely worship him. This guy is a scumbag. This guy is an evil person. And for whatever reason he posted this, which obviously he hates Donald Trump. He despises Republicans. He despises what you and I stand for. So it's no surprise that he posted. For whatever reason, though, he walked it back. He deleted the post and then posted this on his Instagram account. Quote, I posted earlier a picture of some shells I saw today on a beach walk, which I assumed were a political message. I didn't realize some folks associated those numbers with violence. It never occurred to me, but I oppose violence of any kind, so I took the post down. James Comey is full of shit, is what he is. I'm supposed to believe that the former director of the FBI, the nation's largest, most high profile and high on the ladder law enforcement agency and bureau, did not know what 8647 meant? I'm supposed to believe that that's the case? He genuinely believes that the United States and the American public are a bunch of morons. Now, it's obvious he did this because he wants to get in the news. He knew what he was doing when he posted it. He knew he would have to take it down after media outrage and public backlash over this because he's not stupid. Now, James Comey is dishonest. I would argue he's evil and a distrustful person, but he's not stupid. James Comey is very smart in what he does. Now, he's still a scumbag, sure, but he's not a dumb person. So he knew what he was doing. He knew it would get his name out there. He loves attention. If I've learned anything from watching James Comey over the year, he loves the national spotlight. He loves media attention. So he posted that picture of just some random shells on the beach. Who knows? Deletes it. However, I think this may have been a misstep from the former FBI director because the Trump folks in the Trump administration, they're not backing down on this. Kash Patel posting, quote, we are aware of recent social media posts by the former FBI director James Comey directed at President Trump. We are in communication with Secret Service and Director Curran. Primary jurisdiction is with the Secret Service on these matters, and we, the FBI, will provide all necessary support. So that's been the response there. Well, last night, Tulsi Gabbard was on Jesse Waters' program on the Fox News Channel. This is what she had to say as it relates to James Comey's postings.
Do you believe Comey should be in jail?
I do. Any other person with the position of influence that he has, people who take very seriously what a guy of his stature, his experience, and what the propaganda media has built him up to be, I'm very concerned for the president's life. We've already seen assassination attempts. I'm very concerned for his life. And James Comey, in my view, should be held accountable and put behind bars for this.
Well, there you go. There's Tulsi Gabbard. He should be thrown behind bars. I mean, if the investigation concludes that that's what's going on here, I kind of don't disagree. You know, it's so interesting when you watch the left, right? Because this is the party of peace. It's the party of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Everybody getting along. Kumbaya this, kumbaya that. These are the most politically violent people that you could possibly imagine. I mean, the left will go to whatever odds or whatever means necessary to continue to push their political agenda and political narrative. They will go as far as trying to assassinate a presidential candidate, former president of the United States. They will threaten violence upon a president or Republicans' lives. The left has a serious problem right now. And I genuinely think that this is something that they are going to have to face. The hatred, the vitriol, and it's not just like nasty behavior. Politics are nasty. And people bitch and complain and argue back and forth and say mean things. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about mean things being said. That's politics. If you can't handle mean things being said, then get out of politics. That's the name of the game, Jack. As Joe Biden would say, my dad used to tell me at the kitchen table, listen here, Jack, politics is, I forgot, I'm talking too long, right? That's something like Joe Biden would say. Politics is a nasty sport. I get it. But when you take what are harsh conversations and very dramatic differences in political ideology and political beliefs, and then seemingly parlay that into threats of violence against individuals that you disagree with, that's a serious problem. And there's one party that has solely been leading this charge, and that is the Democrat Party. No question about it. These people are willing to get blood to continue to push forward their political agenda and narrative. They will attack institutions. They will attack law enforcement. They will go after individuals. And it's no surprise. I mean, it's been cheered on for years. Maxine Waters, give them hell. When they're at a restaurant or a gasoline station, give them hell. Get in their face. Chuck Schumer talking about the whirlwind that is going to come against Justices Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Comey Barrett. It is whipped up and ginned up by Democrats. And so when you've got the former FBI director posting this on Instagram, he knew damn well what he was doing. Comment coming in on our Rumble chat this morning. This Comey BS is a distraction from something. I wonder what, or is it an extremely slow news day? I don't know if it's a distraction from something. That is, of course, pretty typical and a very keen insight there. I think this is a guy that just strives for attention. I mean, you have to go back multiple years to remember when James Comey was in the spotlight, right? Over the Hillary Clinton email stuff and all of that. This guy loves national attention. James Comey loves being talked about. And he knew he could get talked about with this. He knew that Republicans would talk about it. He knew people like me would talk about it. So he did it. Not me in particular, but folks in conservative media. The big difference is, unlike the past, this administration is not going to put up with this stuff. And if the former head of the Federal Bureau of Investigations wants to make active threats against the President of the United States, there's a strong possibility that he finds himself in some serious hot water. There's a strong possibility with Trump 2.0, with individuals like Kristi Noem and Kash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard, that these individuals are not going to put up with this crap, and that James Comey very well could be brought in by the Secret Service to testify as to what he was trying to do. Now, of course, he'll turn it into the fact that he is a victim of this, and he was, you know, just some random shells on the beach happened to read 8647, something of that nature. So maybe he's looking for some media exposure. Aqua Blue's got a good point. Does he have a book coming out soon? That's a great question. That would be a great way to get your name back in the press. James Comey is just an attention whore. I mean, he just loves attention. And it's obvious that this is what this was to do. Then his half-assed statement after the fact, which I'm sure was already pre-written. I refused to suspend belief in reality to the point where I'm going to tell myself that James Comey meant something else by the fact of what he posted. And if in fact he didn't know what that means, then I guess that shows that he was completely unqualified to be the director of the FBI. If he doesn't understand what that is, then he absolutely was not qualified for that position. I think he was. I don't agree with hardly anything he did. James Comey's a smart guy. He's a very savvy political operator. James Comey knows what he is doing. He's a very intentional person. And I don't think you can argue that, even though you disagree with him politically. Smart and savvy political operator. No question about that, any way, shape, or form. So we'll see in the next couple of days whether any more controversy surrounds this. We'll see if the Secret Service gets involved and starts dealing with old James Comey there, loving being in the media spotlight. Caught a very interesting video on X yesterday. This was posted by the @breaking911 account on X, which if you're not following them, you definitely should. And it's a video of ICE agents tackling a man in a pond outside of a Mecklenburg County courthouse. This is in Charlotte. Take a look at this. Sorry for you audio listeners. You can see the post over on our show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Take a look at this. So in this video, you've got a guy who is in a pond. Multiple ICE agents jump in the water after him. The fact that this is outside of the Mecklenburg County Courthouse would lead me to believe that this individual, likely illegally in the United States, wanted from ICE, was at the courthouse for a different reason. ICE agents showed up. He attempted to get away from them by jumping in a pond. This guy in the blue shirt comes over, tackles him, and brings him into the water, and a couple of other agents swarm him. And, you know, there's this thing that the Democrats continue to point out, like, oh, is this what you voted for? Yeah, this is exactly what I voted for. 100%. President Donald Trump made a pledge to the American people during his campaign that he would deal with the problem of illegal immigration. So yes, this is exactly what I voted for. I also voted for judges like Hannah Dugan to be charged, arrested, and prosecuted when they decide that they are above the law and that they are going to allow a dangerous criminal to escape out of a back hallway in a courtroom. This is exactly what I voted for. I voted for the rule of law. Whether you're illegally in the country, whether you're a judge that are breaking your oath and breaking the law as it relates to your job and your responsibility as somebody who is a judge, this is exactly what I voted for. I don't know. I don't know why people are against this. Why are you against people that are illegally in the country being held responsible for their actions? Why are you okay with individuals knowingly and willingly breaking our laws and coming into the United States? It just makes absolutely no sense to me. And it doesn't make sense to the vast majority of American people either, because when you look at political polling, which we'll do coming up here in just a minute, when you look at political polling, you'll find out very clearly that the American people are in favor of deportations. The American people are in favor of getting folks that are not legally in the country, dangerous, hardened criminals, out of the U.S. They don't want these people in their neighborhoods, in their communities. It's a losing political issue for the left, and damn if they won't just continue down this road. I don't know what their game plan is, but they are barking up the wrong tree on this issue. It is a losing political stance by every single possible metric. Every single possible metric. So, great video, great work by ICE agents. These guys aren't supposed to be here, and they shouldn't be. So they're doing their job and holding these individuals accountable. Well, even when you've got people like the Mecklenburg County Sheriff and Gary McFadden, who wants to ignore ICE detainers and do whatever he damn well pleases as well. As I mentioned, we will jump into some political polling coming up here in a minute. But before that, I want to tell you about the law group here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in the position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures that your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, they're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088. You can also visit them online at the lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088 or online at lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. I use the Law Group back almost 5 years ago when I went through my real estate transaction, had a phenomenal experience with them. So whatever the legal challenge is, head on over to their website, lawgroupnc.com, or give them a call at 910-251-6088. We appreciate their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. We've got brand new political polling out this morning from carolinajournal.com. We'll dive into some of those details coming up after this, right here on the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Good Friday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. We've got a brand new poll out this morning that is available over at CarolinaJournal.com. Full disclosure, I do work with Carolina Journal. I host their radio show in Charlotte weekday mornings, 5 to 6 a.m. It's called the Carolina Journal News Hour. And often we do political polling throughout the year and off years like we are here in 2025, every couple of months. And so we dove into a variety of questions, and I thought some of the responses were interesting. So we're just going to kind of scroll through and look through some of the polling here this morning. We're going to start off with the economy. That was one of the major focuses of this poll. And so the question was this: overall, do you think the economy is getting better, getting worse, or staying the same? And 54% of people said that they felt that the economy was getting worse. The big number to note here is this 37% saying that it's getting much worse. Obviously, tariffs are a big discussion at the federal level. President Donald Trump has stayed strong on his tariff message, whether you like it or not, and that is having an impact, or at least a perceived impact, on the economy. Now, certain sectors of the economy have in fact improved. Right, the prices at grocery stores have come down. Prices in gas have come down as well. So within about 100 days, I think this is a pretty reasonable and realistic response when you look at how many people were upset with the economy back last year. That was one of the major reasons that they elected President Donald Trump. That was one of the reasons that so many people showed up and supported him. It was the economy, or in the case of the Biden administration, the failure as it related to the economy. So this, you know, it should be a pretty relatively concerning number for the Trump administration. I know that some of these tariff deals are being made. The question really is, and I brought this point up before, you know, midterm elections are next year. Primaries are in March. You know, we're 8 months, 9 months away from primaries taking place. If this sentiment still exists in, you know, as we go through the summer of next year, it's going to be a really tough election for Republicans. By the way, all over the place. Like, it's not just going to affect the U.S. Senate races. It will affect county commission seats. It will affect town council seats. It will affect school boards and the General Assembly. If this polling is still accurate a year from now and the voters still feel this way, that's going to be a problem for Republicans to deal with. So that was a question on economic change. Now, this is a not surprising answer to this question. How likely do you think it is that higher tariffs on imported goods will result in you paying more for products that you buy? No surprise here, 75% of people said likely, 19% said not likely, and about 5% were unsure. This has been something that the administration has telegraphed, that, you know, in order to gain long-term strength for the United States, in order to build some of these long-term relationships and get the U.S. economy on track for the long term, you're going to have to deal with some short-term pain. And there's the saying, short-term pain for long-term gains. That's the saying. And the question is, as I was just mentioning, how long are the American people willing to put up with this? How long can the American people sustain what could be significantly higher prices in various sectors? Right? Even though you might like Trump, even though you might like Republicans and like some of these ideas, if your paycheck is shrinking month after month because, not because you're getting paid less, but because things cost more, that's going to have an impact. Whether you love Trump or hate him, it's going to have an impact. And so this administration, and it's obvious that the work is being done, but they've got to work incredibly quick to get these tariff deals signed, get these trade agreements dealt with, and relax some of these tariff pressures. Because it's only, there's the American people, especially coming up off the last 4 years, can only take so much. There's only so much wiggle room in middle-class America's budget to deal with impacts and prices. And so that is not necessarily a surprising number as it relates to this, 75% of people thinking it's going to have an impact. That's what's been said. It's been said by the administration. It's been said by folks that agree and disagree with Trump's tariff plans. However, for the folks that agree with the plans, they're looking for some of those longer-term goals, some of those longer-term objectives to be met. So those are a couple of the questions there on the economy. I thought this one was interesting as well. Tariff benefit timeline. How long of a disruption to the U.S. economy would you be willing to accept in order for the United States to realize any economic benefits from higher tariffs? The largest response to this quote, the largest response to this was 40.6% of people who said, I do not believe there will be any benefit from tariffs. And I found that to be rather interesting. That even with all of these trade deals and all of these discussions going on, 40% of voters, Republicans, unaffiliateds, Democrats, said, I don't believe there's going to be any benefit. Now, the vast majority of people outside of that found themselves in the 1 to 3 year range as it related to these to tariffs and some of the benefits that will be hopefully reaped by the United States as this continues to take place. So you've got 16% of people that say 1 year and 17% of people that say 2 to 3 years. So that's the time frame that people are in as it relates to tariffs. The next question on tariffs. Which of the following statements comes closer to your view on tariffs proposed by President Donald Trump? The largest response to this was, tariffs raise consumer prices and hurt businesses that rely on imported goods and raw materials. 48% of people said that. However, just behind that at 40% was, tariffs are necessary to protect American industries and reduce dependence on foreign countries. So, you know, those numbers are relatively close. 8 percentage points is not a major gap. It's substantial, but it's not a major gap. So you've got a very close split here between hurts consumers and hurts the businesses, while other folks are saying, well, hey, we've got to protect American industry. We've got to protect from the intellectual property theft that exists in places like China, who take U.S. products and goods, rip them off in the international market, and start shipping them throughout the world. It's a huge issue for American business. So I thought that that was an interesting response there as well. A couple of more questions as it related to worker shortages and things of that nature in the poll. I'll have the link for some additional details on that. I then want to go into favorability. I thought that typically Carolina Journal asks this in its polls. And so looking at the image of Josh Stein, he's been in office now since the beginning of January, and he has a very strong favorability rating, 48.1%. That is a strong favorability rating for Governor Stein. His unfavorable only at 23.9%. And I think, you know, as you look at these numbers, there really hasn't been a lot of controversy for Stein yet. He's only signed 2 pieces of legislation into law. One of them dealt with Hurricane Helene relief. The other he just signed this week. And so there really hasn't been a big battle. There's not been big discussions over the budget. There haven't been big discussions over some of the, you know, various left versus right political issues that exist in our society. So I'm not necessarily surprised that his favorability is as high as it is right now, because he really hasn't been battle tested. There hasn't been a big blow up, a big conflict yet where he's really had to draw a line in the sand. Yes, he's made statements. Yes, he's made comments. But for the vast majority of North Carolinians, and I want to state this point because I think it's important. You listening to this show this morning, I love you. Thank you for listening. I appreciate your support. You are odd. I am odd. We are in the 1% of individuals that follow politics. Those folks that listen to talk radio, listen to conservative-leaning podcasts and things of that nature, you're in the 1%. You are hyper-focused on politics. You understand the nuts and bolts of what's going on. And so when you look at polls like this, you have to remember, a political poll, especially one like this, is looking at a vast group of voters. You are looking at a group of people, some that are super politically informed and some that don't follow politics at all. And look at this. 9% of people have never even heard of Josh Stein in this poll. These are North Carolinians that responded to this poll conducted by Carolina Journal. 9% of people have never even heard of the governor. And so when you look at this favorability versus unfavorability, this number is not surprising to me. It's not shocking to me. I suspect, as at least this is what I expect to happen, Stein will come at odds with the Republican-led GA. over a vast majority of legislation that they passed this year. He will come at odds likely over the budget as well. And once that happens and he's out in the public speaking about some of this stuff, you might see his favorability numbers start dipping just a little bit as he's battle tested and as some of these issues come to the forefront. So that's the image of Josh Stein. Now, turning our attention to President Donald Trump, his favorability currently sits at 45.5%, his unfavorable at 50.8%. Not necessarily surprised with that as well. When you look at the president, everything that's going on, not everybody loves it. Not everybody's happy with the discussions of tariffs. Not everybody is happy with some of the things that they're seeing out of the administration. Of course, it doesn't help that the media, the vast majority of American media, spends 24/7 hammering Trump and his allies about everything that they do. So I don't think that these numbers are a disaster for Trump or anything like that. Favorability in the mid-40s for a president is pretty typically a good number when you look at when things start to get iffy. It's when you start dipping into the 30s. That's when you're starting to deal with a problem. That's where Joe Biden was in the summer of last year. You know, his approval and his favorability rating were, in fact, in the mid-30s. And that's when you really start running into an issue. 45, 50, I don't really think this is a big issue for the president. So that's the favorability of Donald Trump. Now, I found this to be pretty eye-popping. Senator Tom Tillis, we've talked about Senator Tillis a lot. His favorability rating is only 26.4%. Now, that's a problem. When you have a Republican senator, we only, of course, like every other state, have two senators, and your approval rating is 26.5%, that's a problem. Now, of course, why is the favorability so low? Well, Democrats don't like him at all. So that immediately right there, you've got half of people that don't like you at all. Then you add in the MAGA crowd, the Trump supporting base that continually finds themselves frustrated with Senator Tillis, finds themselves frustrated with him going against Ed Martin, trying to spike the football on the Pete Hegseth nomination. They're frustrated with Senator Tillis. Now, I've stated before, I still think he probably wins his primary. I don't think that there, unless somebody comes crawling out of the woodwork, Senator Tillis has so much money, has the ability to raise so much money, that he'll probably squeak his way through the primary. And in all likelihood, probably get annihilated in the general election. That's probably what will happen. Now, we don't know who the candidates are going to be. The lines have not been drawn yet, but that's probably what happens. It's going to be a very tough race for Republicans in 2026, and it's not going to be helpful when Senator Tillis is finding himself at odds with the MAGA base and the Trump crowd. Even though Trump is likely to probably come out and support Tillis, it's still going to be a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, and it could very well affect him in the general election. So his favorability rating is atrocious at 26.4%. His unfavorable rating, 46.1, and about 18% of people have no opinion. And once again, 9% of people have never heard of Tom Tillis. So it goes to show you how many people are just not actively involved in politics at all. So then we look at Roy Cooper, who is somebody that has come forward as a likely opponent for Senator Tillis in that primary race next year. His favorability, well, still incredibly high, 47.5%. Roy Cooper did a phenomenal job as governor, keeping his favorability very high. He did have very strong battles with the North Carolina General Assembly and Republicans. But for whatever reason, Teflon Roy was able to withstand it. And he is still a very popular figure in North Carolina. 47.5% favorability. His unfavorable at 36.6%. 11% have no opinion. Only 4% have not heard of him. So this is a strong number. If I'm Roy Cooper and the folks behind the scenes figuring out what Democrats are going to do as it relates to the Senate race, that's the primary will be in March of next year. This is a good poll. These are very good numbers for Roy Cooper. And this would likely cause him to have a very strong lead in an early race. Getting some comments in on Rumble this morning. No way does Trump come out and support Tillis. I disagree. I think Trump absolutely comes out and supports Tillis. Because I think the reality is, Trump knows, and or people around Trump, I should say, that if there's going to be a Republican to battle against Roy Cooper, who is an incredibly popular, successful figure in North Carolina, it has to be somebody with very broad name ID. It has to be somebody like a Tom Tillis. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm not saying that that's what I want to happen, but that's just the fact of politics. That's just how this game is going to play out. You can't put somebody that does not have strong name ID up against the former 8-year governor of North Carolina and think that they're going to win the election. That's just not how this works, especially for a Senate race. Especially for a race that is so, is going to be, I would argue, maybe one of the most expensive Senate races next cycle. There is a very strong possibility that this North Carolina Senate race is the most expensive race in the 2026 election cycle. We are going to be bombarded with this election because it's very important. So, again, we are way too far out from this to be like going on to full-on predictions, but I do think Trump probably comes out and supports Tillis. And so then that begs the very interesting question for folks that support Trump. If you support Trump, then you have to go with his endorsement, right? And this is kind of the dichotomy that's been created a little bit in the Trump camp. People, you get frustrated with Senator Tillis when he doesn't support Trump, rightfully so. That's a fine reason to be frustrated and upset. But then at the same time, if Trump does come out and support Tillis, then how can you put yourself in a situation where you're going against Trump? You see the dichotomy there? I'll just say it frankly. It's hypocritical. You cannot be pissed at Tom Tillis for not supporting Trump's nominees, and then at the same time, disregard what the president says as it relates to a Senate candidate. I mean, that's just the reality. I think it's incredibly hypocritical. You either need to be, and I'm not saying you need to be this, but if you're going to be ride or die with President Donald Trump, then you need to be ride or die. And if you're going to support the things he supports, then that's what you have to do. I don't know how you can be frustrated that people aren't following him lockstep and then you yourself not following lockstep with his endorsements. I have an issue with that. You have to pick a lane. You can't have it both ways. You can't be frustrated when Republicans don't support something that Trump does and then not support the Republicans that Trump tells you to do. I mean, that's just how I see it. And you're entitled to your opinion. Getting some comments in on our Rumble chat this morning. I think you're right about Trump and Tillis, but we have to find a star to primary Tillis. North Carolinians are done with him. Oh, the numbers prove very much that's the case. He's got a 26% favorability rating. It's atrocious. Saying, I will support Trump, but will not vote for Tillis. That's your prerogative, and that's a fine thing to feel. But I see an issue with being pissed at Tillis for not supporting Trump, but then not supporting Trump's backing of potentially Tillis. And to some of the comments about a star merging, I agree with you. I think it's time for a star in this seat. However, this election cycle is not the time for some random person to primary Tillis. And the issue that you're going to have is a bunch of people that do not have strong name ID are going to jump in this primary. And that's going to split and fracture the vote amongst, you know, half a dozen candidates with little name ID and allow Tillis to easily squeak through the primary. That's how this happens. Republicans are phenomenal at this. We run 30 candidates in the primary, completely diluting the grassroots vote, And then the incumbent, in this case, Senator Tillis, will go through because all he has to get is, I think, 30% of the vote and he wins in the primary, or 35 or 40, something like that. So don't shoot the messenger. I'm not saying this is what I want to happen. I'm bringing you this information from a political standpoint, from an objective of, this is how politics work. And even though Trump is probably frustrated with Tillis, even though Republicans in North Carolina are frustrated with Tillis, he's the strong candidate. Now, there is the possibility of somebody like a Dan Bishop going for this position. I think somebody like Dan Bishop in that spot, in that primary, could make things very interesting. Dan Bishop has the name ID. He ran a major statewide election last year as running for attorney general. He does have the backing of somebody like President Donald Trump. That could make things very interesting. That could make things very, very interesting. But outside of somebody like Dan Bishop, and that's probably the only name, that really is the only name that comes to my mind right now, that for anybody else, it's going to be hard. Now, presumably a congressperson could do it. One of our current 14 congressional representatives, 11 of them are Republicans, or 10 of them are Republicans. One of them could throw their hat into the race. But really, what matters more than anything else is the Trump endorsement. Who is able to secure that endorsement? Who is able to secure Trump's support? And if it's Tillis, he wins the primary. And then it's going to be incumbent on Republican voters, Trump voters, to back Trump's candidate or allow a Democrat to win. That's really what it's going to come down to. So that's at least some of the details from the Carolina Journal poll. It is up this morning over on their website, carolinajournal.com. May 2025, 3 in 4 North Carolina voters say tariffs will increase prices. Head on over to their website, click on the poll tab. There's a lot more information, a lot more detail as it relates to their poll. Great polling work there from the Carolina Journal and their May poll. We'll continue to look at some of the these details and some of these numbers as they trickle out in the coming weeks and months. Well, hey, that's going to do it for a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thank you so much for spending this week with us. Well, again, thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. We are back with you Monday morning, live 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts.